Hello, you amazing people out there, and welcome to the Amazing Action Comics podcast, where we are all about independent comics. I am one of your hosts, Angel, with John or Phil or Pepe.
You went through all that work to fix the opening thing, and I just confused the issue three times over now.
Oh, my God. I did it reluctantly, but you know what? I had to respect wishes. Because I completely understand. So
yeah. Today is the award ceremony, or the scholarship award ceremony for sports journalism scholarship in my dad's name over at Montclair State University.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Later this afternoon.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah, Montclair actually is a really nice university.
Oh, great.
Been there a couple times. Yeah, and it's funny because I was watching the news this morning, and I guess there's a whole bunch of broadcast stuff going on because Al Roker just got inducted into the Broadcasters Hall of Fame. This morning, so that was pretty cool.
And the Weight Watchers Hall of Fame too, Al Roker.
No, he's the only person on TV that actually lost weight throughout the years.
It's crazy. It's so insane. Yeah.
Remember how big he was?
I remember the first time I saw him after a while when he lost that weight, I was like, who is this guy? It was like he looked completely different. It was crazy.
Yeah. Now I think he was sick for a while and stuff like that too. It's just really funny. But he's been on there for the longest. I think especially on that Today Show, he's been on there forever. I think he's the longest running person on there right now.
Yeah. We're going to do an hour about Al Roker.
We are. All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of the Indie Comic Review at Amazing Action Comics. What do I have? I have my notes here. All right, cool. We have some great stuff for you this week. We have a couple of books that both Phil and I read, and then some that, you know, dude, I just couldn't get through one of them. So we'll see what you thought about it.
Really quick, small bit of news, slightly tangentially related. Congratulations, Jim Lee, Image founder. He has been named the president of DC Comics.
The president of DC Comics?
President Jim Lee of DC, yeah.
Okay. Is that different from his previous title?
His previous title was like chief executive officer or something like that. So this is sort of like, I think this is like Paul Levitt's position, president / publisher or something like that, Jeanette Kahn beforehand. So this is like, now he is the top of the DC Comics aspect of it.
So he's just dealing with the DC Comics side.
Yeah. But although I think there was something where there's speculation, like this is good for James Gunn because they work really well together. So you might see a lot of like Jim Lee contributing ideas or designs for some stuff in the movies. I don't know. But I do have a feeling that we're going to get a lot of high collars, belt pocket typing back. That we lost in the New 52 era that he contributed those designs. You know, that also means there's going to be some sort of like 15 year anniversary revisitation of the New 52 just because Jim Lee can now.
So. Right. Yeah. I mean, good fan. I mean, it's been a while since he's been out of Image, right?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, he's 20 years now. He was, right?
Yeah. Because he was the first one to leave was Rob. And then I think it was a couple years after that was Jim. Yeah.
Because Jim took all of, Jim took all of his Image stuff, the Wildstorm universe, and then ported that over to DC. So DC was publishing a Wildstorm imprint for a while, and then as a result of the New 52, those Wildstorm characters got fully integrated into the DC universe. Mm-hmm. Still remain. So
that's pretty interesting. So would his stuff still be considered independent? Or is that part of the mainstream because it falls under the DC umbrella now?
So for, I would say when it was an imprint with DC, you could treat it like what Vertigo used to be. So there was DC mainstream, then there was Vertigo imprint, and then Wildstorm imprint, right? And then I think once the New 52 happened, they got rid of that as an imprint. They also got rid of Vertigo eventually as an imprint. Mm-hmm. So now Wildstorm as an imprint doesn't exist. It is now just part and parcel DC Comics. So no longer independent. I would say you could even make the case once it became an imprint for DC, it was no longer an imprint. No longer, or it was no longer indie because it was no longer with Image. So fascinating stuff. We'll see. That's pretty exciting. You know, that's again, that's a guy who started in mainstream, went indie, you know, co-founder of Image, and now he's head honcho over at, you know, one of the big two. So.
Yeah, making their way back. And it's funny because a lot of those guys left. And it wasn't, it was mostly because they wanted to have more creative input in the characters that they were working with. So we're talking about the initial, what's that? And it's actually six guys that went over from Marvel and DC over to create their own company, which is, you know, that we know today, which is Image. And, you know, I'm constantly, dude, just reminded, because I listened to so many podcasts and just listening to the history of that company and listening to the reasons why they left and how everything kind of just culminated together. And it didn't happen overnight. This took a little bit of time, but it was mostly coming down to just being frustrated with, you know, playing with other people's toys, and not being able to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
On top of that, creating characters for companies that they had to kind of like sign over. So they never got any rights to them or back end profits for that. I think some of those contracts came in later on and stuff like that after these guys left too. So if you create characters for like Marvel DC, then you get a little piece of the pie and stuff like that, from what I understand. Who knows if things have changed now?
It started sort of a seismic shift in how creators were treated for creating new characters. Because I always look at Bane as a great example. Chuck Dixon and as the writer, and Graham Nolan, I think, as a penciler, created Bane, right? For use in the Nightfall story to set all that up. And this is what, 92, 93. If they had done that 2 years before, they would not get a creator credit. They would not get any residuals. But since that happened after Image, when DC and Marvel were like, okay, we're going to make deals with creators to create characters, then, you know, so since that happened after Image was formed, Chuck Dixon always talks about, like, I get creator credit for Bane. They make Bane toys. I get residuals. You know, Bane appears in movies. I get residuals. But yeah, two years before that, before Image, that would not have happened for Chuck Dixon.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you mentioned that it was the artist and the writer gets credit for it. And I'm listening to a podcast. I'm not going to mention anything right now, but I'm listening to a creator who was, you know, fighting on that. Because
right now you're listening to this podcast? Because you should be concentrating on this one.
Yeah, I'm listening at the same time that I'm talking. Where if the artist created the character and they should get the sole credit. But if you were working for the big two and that character came into play and a writer was writing the script for it, they got co-credit for it.
Yeah. That's sort of like good.
No, I don't know what to think about that. Yeah. I don't know what side of the fence to, unless the writer was with the creator, the artist, at the same time and they were both giving input on what the character would be as far as power set, you know, their personality type, what they're wearing and stuff like that. And if the writer is just writing a script after the fact, I don't know if they get credit.
Yeah, it's
for creating that character.
It has to do, I think, with when the character was conceived and what input, if any, from the artist, right? So I always look, you know, a great example is Venom, right? So David Michelinie created the concept of Venom, but his idea of what Venom should be was very different from what ultimately happened. He wanted Venom to be
which
a woman,
McFarlane, right?
Right. Then McFarlane comes in and McFarlane says, you know, let's play to my strengths. Let's do this idea that Venom is the anti-Spider-Man. So instead of being a woman in this suit, let's make him a big hulking guy. That's just crazy. Cause that really plays to my artistic strengths. So then Todd McFarlane, so it's sort of like a 50-50, right? The writer comes up with the concept.
But that I can
idea,
see, because that's the writer then, coming up with the concept. Right. But what if it's the other way around?
If the artist has come up with the concept and then says to the writer, write this character. Yeah, it's interesting. It depends, I guess, on how much input, how much the writer is contributing. If the artist has a character, the whole cloth, boom, and the guy's just got to do the words, then probably you're going to lean towards sole creator credit for the artist. But if it's like a symbiosis, if Chuck Dixon says, all right, I'm creating this character, he's called Bane, he's hooked up to this thing that gives him the Venom juice, and he's got a mask. And then Graham Nolan's like, oh, okay, well, I have the information I need. I'm going to just create the look. And then I guess that's a co-credit too, you know? So it's weird.
But from a corporation standard, to make things a level playing field, I don't think that's the way it went. It didn't go by case basis. It just gave co-credits to the artist and the writer, which is kind of out there. All right, we're going off on a tangent. I didn't want to go.
And this is why lawyers exist, for this kind of stuff. Exactly. <right?
laughs> Yeah. All right, guys. So we have, this is episode 108 of the Indie Comic Review. We have three books for you this week, and these are for the week of May 3rd in the year of our Lord 2023. So I'm going to let you start here.
Okay.
So let's do this, because I really want to get your input. Well, I don't even know if you read it, but did you?
I did.
You did. All right. So I did. First book is
Lamentation. Angel, what is best in life?
What is the line?
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to read the comic from Oni Press called Lamentation.
To hear the lamentation of the women.
So, so this is by Oni Press, or is presented by Oni Press. It is written by the very prolific and everywhere Cullen Bunn, illustrated by Aruna Sassini. I probably just botched that. Colored by Hillary Jenkins, and edited by Jasmine Amiri, with editing assists by Bess Polaris. So, this is an interesting book. So this, I'm guessing it's going to be a three issue, because issue one is act one. They say issue two is act two. And it's a big chunky book at about 48 pages of fear, as it says right there on the cover. Well, you can't see on that image, but I have it on this. And this, you know, Angel, you and I both have done some acting. I know I went to school for acting, putting my BFA in performing arts from Adelphi University to excellent use right now. And one of the things I kind of dug about this, so this does take place in the theater world, right? And you basically have a young woman who is answering an audition call for this thing called Razid's Lamentation at the Requiem Theater. And the Requiem Theater, when she gets to it, is just run down, closed down, overgrown with ivy and whatnot. And it doesn't look like anything's going on in there. But when she walks in, she does walk in the middle of a rehearsal. There's a full cast, a director, production team. And she's kind of just thrown right in there. She's given the script. And then, you know, so just read it off the side there. And then we're just going to throw you in. And in one aspect, that's kind of like every actor's fear, right? Every actor kind of has these nightmares where you're on stage and you just don't have your costuming. You don't have your lines. You don't know. You're on stage. You're lost without anything to go on, any direction to go on. That's always a kind of a recurring nightmare that I've had as an actor. And I know other people have had as well, especially when you're in the middle of rehearsing something. And so what kind of happens is you see bits and pieces of this play. And as they're sort of rehearsing this play, everything around them starts to be kind of come kind of real. So they're actually in this castle with this storm blowing, and they're in their costumes, and they're like fully immersed in this production. And then something happens, pulls them back out, and you see, boom, okay, it's just the rehearsal space. They're in their regular clothes and whatnot. So it kind of jogs back and forth between that, which I thought was a really neat effect. I thought the art was really good. It kind of conveys the information really well. And I thought the coloring handles those transitions very well, very good as well. So you kind of know where you are based on the art and the color in the story. Theater people are very weird, and the people involved in this are no different. The director is very intense, very obsessed. A lot of the people who are in the cast are just going with it. Some people are a little skeptical. The woman who just joined finds out that they've all been there for a fairly long time. And they keep saying time isn't passing like it normally does when they're inside this theater. So there's a real heavy supernatural element in here, which I thought was really good. So I thought, you know, the 46 pages or 48 pages of Fear does a great job of kind of fleshing out what's going on, creating a mood, creating an atmosphere, setting up the mystery. And it looks like there's definitely going to be some horrific things that are going to happen. My one misgiving is sometimes, and this is also I felt with the other book that I read, sometimes in these, when you have a large cast in a comic, it's very hard sometimes to differentiate who is who. And sometimes that's an artist thing. Sometimes it's also just like a space and a time thing, as far as what you have to work with in this medium. So I felt like, yeah, there was a little guide at the beginning as to who is what in the story. I felt like a little too many characters were introduced so fast that it was a little hard to differentiate who was who and how they fit into this whole sort of thing. But other than that, I thought that this is a really cool first issue. And again, as a theater person myself, like it kind of hit a lot of good notes that I was familiar with, that recognized and resonated. So yeah, I thought this was really cool. Like I said, I think it's a three issue. I don't really see it being more than that. But a great mystery, really moody, and yeah, Lamentation by Oni. Definitely check it out. I thought it was really, really good.
So what genre do you think it would fall under?
Oh, this is definitely the horror genre that, you know, Cullen Bunn, you know, really does trade in very well. Again, the theater aspect is really just a backdrop. There's something supernatural and spooky going on here. So it's really just sort of, yeah, it's a little horror thing. Or again, 48 pages of fear. It's the genre is fear.
The genre is fear. All right, guys. Lamentation by Oni Press. I think we haven't done anything on Oni Press for a while, so it's good to see them, you know, putting out some stuff out there.
Was a very prolific publisher, now just very little output from Oni, you know.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I can think of from Oni is Rick and Morty, right?
Is that they're doing Rick and Morty? They also had that Dirtbag Rapture a year or so ago, a couple others, but not as prolific
like
as they were.
Right now is just that I can think of. But yeah, all right, they're there. Grab it, guys, if you like the horror genre. All right, so I'm gonna go next because I read a story that you did not read because we didn't get a lot of copies because people don't like to order stuff, but it's all good. This is another one from Mad Cave Studios. So the first book that I've actually read from Mad Cave Studios is called Hunt, Kill, Repeats, which I'm really enjoying. It's such a weird title, but it's dealing with like the Greek gods, sort of like in this modern time where it's not Aphrodite, it's Athena, I believe. I can't remember, but it's one of the gods who's kind of like falling in love with a human, having a child up from a human, and Zeus is not having any of it. So sending his children to go and kill her husband and bring her back. So it's going on to the third issue. And it's pretty interesting. So, I was like, Mad Cave Studios has been around for a little bit, for a couple of years. I think they had this one book. It was about, like, big cats. Can't remember what it was called. And I just couldn't get on board with it because I don't like any of that anthropomorphic stuff. Except I'm reading Good Boy. So I have to stop saying that because there's certain things that I'm drawn to. But whatever. All right, so this one's called Monomyth. And this is written by David Hazan with art by Cecilia Lovalvo. You got the colorist is Marissa Louise, letters by Lucas Gattoni. And this is from the same writer, if I'm not mistaken, that has written Nottingham. So there's sort of a little bit of a historical context when it comes to either fictional or actual events that happened in the past. So we know that Nottingham is based off of the old Robin Hood tales. So this one has sort of like a Merlin-esque kind of wizard feel to it in the very beginning. And basically what you're dealing with is a wizard who's dealing with a time and place where magic is dying, which means he's going to be leaving as well. And I believe his name, and it took me a while because it was driving me crazy because I thought he was talking to someone the entire time, but he was talking about himself in the third person. Yeah. So his name is Harmonicus. And I had to look it up, and there's some historical text on the word Harmonicus and what it means, and there's some alchemy relationship to it as well. But I got to dive in a little bit deeper to see if there's any more other than that. So the alchemy aspect of it would let me kind of create the relationship between him being a wizard and his actual name. But it does have some other connotations to it as well. But basically, you have this wizard who magic is fleeting in his world, and he sends out sort of like this last magic spell that they can do to retrieve wizards from the future of the same bloodline of that timeline. And basically, he casts a spell thinking that he's going to get one person that he can get to come back to that time to help, I guess, either save magic or build magic or teach that wizard as an apprentice to carry on from that point, or send them back to their time so that magic can move forward. It's not 100% clear yet. All I know is that certain things are happening to this wizard, and he throws out a spell into the universe to bring back a wizard to his time to fix or save something. He ends up pulling 7 people in. And it's cool because it almost played like a movie at some point. So there's a lot of jumping around. And it's funny because you mentioned that a lot of characters were introduced early or mm-hmm. too early, and it kind of made things confusing. This kind of does that as well. So you spend about 1 or 2 pages with this wizard. You see what he's doing, cast a spell, and then all of a sudden you have these 7 intros of these characters within pages. So they have a single page pretty much each of introducing the characters in their scenario of where they're from. So like from Detroit, all different parts of the world, but from the same timeline. They're all from the same timeline. They get drawn into the place that it looks like it has like crazy stairs, and the wizard's there, and everybody's losing their shit and like, what the hell's going on? And he's like, harmonicus is called for you. And it drives me insane to talk about themselves in a third person, because I really think it's narcissistic. That they're emulated from above, and that God is calling them down and stuff. So he just keeps doing it. So they act the way that normal people would act. They're asking questions in regards to what's happening, what's going on, why are we here? How the hell did we get here? And the wizard is just being really evasive in answering questions. And he just says, you have one job, one task, and that's to get from here to the top of the stairs. And then he just disappears. And so all the doors locked behind them, and they have no choice but to move forward up there. So they're climbing up the stairs, they get to the top. And basically what we get to find out in this first issue is that this is sort of a test. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's only supposed to be one survivor. So we see what happens at the very end of this, and we actually lose one of these cast members. I'm not going to tell you how, but it was probably one of the best things that I've ever seen in a comic, because they're supposed to be wizards in training, and so they're given sort of like their staffs, but they all look different. Some of them look like a sword, some of them look like a staff, some of them look like wizard, whatever you want to call them, but they're different, and they all pick one. And I think they can cast spells and not realize it. And so there's one person who just opened their mouth, said the wrong thing, and some crazy stuff just happened. So there's a lot that happened in this first issue, which was, I thought was really cool. I think I'm going to actually stick with it because it is a miniseries. I'm not sure how many issues it's supposed to run, because it does just say that it's a mini. So if anything, it might run the 5 or 6 issues. 4 issues is what we've seen commonly for 4 to 6. You have a 3-issue miniseries that you're dealing with now. I think David just has a really good handle on, writing the uniqueness of different characters. That was the first thing I noticed. Everyone had their own voice. And the fact that they come from like different backgrounds as well. So they're not all from like Detroit. You have them from all different places. You have some from Saudi Arabia as well. And then you have some from some Asian parts of the country and stuff like that. But they're all written uniquely to their own voices. And trying to understand this whole situation of, I don't know if this wizard is bad or good, or even if that terminology exists towards him. I think he's just scared and he's trying to rectify something. And he was even surprised that when he threw the spell out that he got that many people to return in. So I'm not sure if there's supposed to be just one, and it has to narrow down to the one. And these guys have to just figure out, they're sort of like in this death trap, and not everyone's going to survive. Some of them are relatives towards one another. Some of them are lovers to one another. And there are people that don't know each other at all. So it's a really good mix of people, because if you had people that didn't know each other at all, 7 different people that didn't know each other at all, there's no stakes, right? You just don't, they're strangers to you. But if you have 2 people that are relatives, if you have 2 people that are connected together because they're lovers, then the stakes are higher. Because as you start to dwindle the numbers down, you have to decide between you and your sibling or you and your lover, what do you do? So I'm waiting for that type of scenario to come in and see what happens. But along the way, yeah, there are plenty of really good scenes with this book. So Monomyth from Mad Case Studios.
What genre would you place this? Because the cover looks very horror. Like, cover looks like a horror book. But the way you're describing it, it's more
like a fantasy mythology. Horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it would fall under that umbrella of multiple genres, right? So, I mean, you have this guy that wrote for Nottingham. So you'd go into sort of that aspect. Even though we didn't get a name of like Merlin or any type of historical context, there's that feel of that timeline. Because I could see almost like a sword and stone kind of thing at the very beginning that he was dealing with. So that felt almost author-esque as well. But there wasn't any mention of that period of time specifically.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you read Nottingham, then you probably like this writer. So this would probably be right up your alley. But if you like horror and fantasy together, then this will definitely be right up your alley. And, you know, I've never been drawn to that stuff particularly. But, you know, it was really good to, you know, stretch my wings a little bit and reach out and see if this was going to hit. And actually, it hit really well. I really liked it. So I'm hoping it's going to have a really good ending to it.
Cool
on that. So yeah, check it out, guys. Monomyth from Mad Cave Studios. All right, we've got one more, and I think we both read this, so I'm gonna go ahead and let you take over and knock us out with
Survival by Dark Horse Comics. This is
for a quick second. So I'm reading this book, right? And I didn't like everything. If we're looking at marketing and we're looking at being clever, the V on this is clever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because now it all fucking sank in for me, which is insane. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, that's a cool. It is a really cool title logo. And yeah, the V definitely does something in there. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, this is written by Sean Lewis, illustrated by Brendan Everett, colored by Natalie Barahona with Brendan Everett, lettered by Ed Dukeshire, and developed by Kevin Gardner and Sean Lewis, edited by Brett Israel with assists by Sanjay Darawat. So yeah, this is interesting. This the first page of this is kind of terrifying because it's talking about a war, but it's between Russia and the Chechen border. And so we got cherry bombed.
We got cherry bombed all over your face. Thank you, Cherry Hill Comics.
It's like Guardians.
Don't do it again; you'll get banned.
there's a 20 cherry minimum. So the first page is kind of terrifying because you get these. It's there's no images. It's just basically news bursts about a war on the Russian Chechen border, which is kind of tangential to what's happening right now. And so to me, that was a little terrifying because they talk about one of the nuclear power plants having a meltdown being caused intentionally in order to turn the tide on this war. So that first page, just even with no image, but just what it was talking about, I was like, oh, that's very now and terrifying. And then you kind of jump ahead into this place called Talkeetna, Alaska, where you have a couple kids who are riding on their bikes, and then they see this downed Russian aircraft. And what they stumble on into that is pretty terrifying. And hey, another example of kids getting killed in a Dark Horse comic. So go Dark Horse for bucking any sensitivities like that. And then you kind of meet your main characters, and you basically have your main focus is this one girl. She's the daughter of a military man. She's in an ROTC military National Guards thing. She and two other guys are driving up to sort of this retreat in Alaska, but it's also in her hometown, where her father has lived forever, sort of post-military in isolation, but still involved, with the military game. And then you meet her younger brother, and you kind of get to know some of these characters. And now, again, there's a lot of characters that are introduced in this. One of the differences, I think, between this and Lamentation with the amount of characters is that the artist does a good job of making each, and the writer too, I think, of making each character have a distinct look and a distinct personality. Whereas in Lamentation, a lot of the characters just on the fringes kind of blur together. Everybody does feel a little bit, unique, and it is a little easier to follow, I think, who is who in this survival. Now, being a first issue at your standard about 20, 22 pages, things do move pretty quick. You get a lot of questions raised. And a lot of stakes, a lot of high stakes by the end, as far as what's going on here, because you basically have this like mad Russian lunatic from this plane, who is not only killing people, but in some cases turning them into these sort of vampiric monsters. So you see one of the victims from earlier in the book later on, like eating some guy's arm, which is kind of crazy. Like, where did the arm come from? I don't know. It's a little fuzzy in that aspect at the end of the first issue there. What this kind of reminds me of a lot is, it's a little bit of Red Dawn, right? Where you basically have these Americans in the wilderness who have to fight this crazy band of Russians in Alaska, even though, you know, Red Dawn wasn't Alaska, but and also a heavy dose of Walking Dead also in this vibe, in this book, survival. So I don't know if this is a mini or if this is intended to be an ongoing, but basically you're going to have, you know, humans versus human monsters fighting and hiding and surviving against each other in this Alaskan backdrop, which I think is a really cool setting and a really good setup. But again, I felt like a lot of the information in the second half of the first issue moved a little too fast in order to sort of hash out everything that's going on. But again, that's the mystery that's being set up. So as we go along, the hope is that this stuff will kind of be revealed and really make sense going down the road. But I thought it was a good first issue. It definitely, you know, hit me in a couple places. Like I said, like the idea that introduced in the first page, very contemporary and very scary. And then, you know, I always love that people fighting others in the wilderness, you know, like the first Blood movie, like that first Rambo movie, for, you know, the one guy in those woods fighting the cops, like that kind of aspect is really cool. So I think we're going to see, you know, these numbers of people get whittled down and reduced as the story goes on. And I think what we're going to see here is we're going to have our female protagonist facing off against this tattooed Russian wild man at the end. I think that's the end game here. But I dug it. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, there was a lot in this book, and like you said, for, you know, 20 to 22 pages of storytelling, there's a lot to get in there, especially when you're trying to catch everybody up on a world that you've not read on before. And also that the beginning reminded me of almost like the Chernobyl. I don't know if you saw that 4-part miniseries that was on, I think it was HBO Max.
I remember the actual Chernobyl. So yeah, I didn't see the series.
So they did the horror stuff around that, which was, is kind of reminding me of that. So whatever radiation was leaked out, it really affected a small number of people who actually stood there, and they ended up becoming these like freaking vampire-ish kind of monsters.
They referenced the Chernobyl meltdown in the first page.
So there was a different meltdown that happened, and obviously at this plane, we don't know if this plane actually, well, it is a Russian plane. So the plane came actually from Russia and landed in Alaska. So we just don't know what happened to these people that were on the plane. So I guess that's the mystery right now that we're dealing with, in regards to what happened to them. And I mean, they can't be vampires because it's daylight, right? Unless what we know about vampires isn't true. So we're calling them vampires, but we don't know if they are. We just know that there's something wacky has happened that's forced these people on this plane that crashed to become really crazy and frantic and then just start attacking people. What I liked about this story, and I'm always looking for different things in storytelling that I can pick up and maybe even, you know, carry on to stuff that I do or appreciate it for what it is. And in movies, especially when it comes to like horror movies, almost all horror movies at the very beginning have a throwaway character, because that's the character that just dies at the very beginning. So there's no investment at all. And I thought it was so great to have that moment in this book where you had that throwaway character with that little kid, because you just knew there was nothing going to happen good in his life. He was a red shirt. That's what he was. And I haven't seen that in a while, and that was pretty cool.
Well, it reminded me of the first few pages of Where Monsters Lie, where just right in the first few pages, you just see a whole bunch of teenage, like younger than teenage, like adolescent kids just get slaughtered by the serial killer, you know? And so, that was I didn't expect that to happen that soon in this book. So I thought that was really effective too.
Yeah. And then to be able to, you know, go up against what, you know, the militia that you have in the Alaskan woods with their, you know, anniversary. And then this little girl's got to be what? I mean, she's ROTC. I don't know if she's in high school or early college.
They mentioned college. Young. Yeah. They mentioned so college young, and her brother's 14. Yeah. So.
Okay. And then her dad being, you know, an ex-Green Beret and stuff like that. So the whole thing kind of played out really well. I think that interaction between the father and the daughter, that she's describing how he is, we haven't seen that yet because when everything happens, it happens like almost immediately. But you can kind of see like her reaction. You can see the fearlessness in her, where her dad actually has to wants to pull her back. But she's just like gung-ho to go after, you know, whatever's going on here. And then throwing in, I don't know how I felt about that one scenario where she's running through the woods, the guy cuts her off, and, you know, she's talking about he went this way, and he's not going to get that far. And he's like, how do you know? Because there's a cliff there.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember it. And then there's that little flashback of how do you know? She's like, well, that's where my mom jumped off. And I thought that was a really heavy moment to throw in the middle of like this back action sequence. So we don't know if she's messed up from that or how she feels about that or if that's even going to be addressed anymore. And I think to have that in there and not have it addressed later on would be a big miss. Because that's a big thing for her to make that connection to knowing what the cliff is and what happened there. So I hope that the writer took that into consideration for the rest of the story. So we'll see if it even comes into play. There's a lot that is going on, and we just don't know what these things are, how they were created, what their motives are, if they have any motives, and what's going to happen. But it does look like whatever they have in them does spread through biting and tearing into the flesh. So you have sort of like this vampiric slash zombie-ish thing going on. So, yeah, I think the Red Dawn, the Walking Dead, is a good comparison. But I liked it. I don't know if it is a mini or if it's an ongoing. More than likely, it's going to be a mini. It was a good issue. And they crept a lot of stuff in there. So if you like sort of like the horror aspect, and if you like Walking Dead and Red Dawn movie, this would be right up your alley. So you might want to check out Survival. From Dark Horse Comics. Yeah, pretty good stuff. Yeah, we had some good reads this week. So Monomyth was definitely a hit for me. I'm going to stick it out hopefully to the end. Hopefully it does have a payoff. Survival was really good to me. I don't know if you're going to stick with Lamentation.
I probably will, especially if it's a three issue. You know, again, I like that world that it exists in, and I like the spooky mystery aspect of it, so...
All right, cool. All right, so there you go. You have your three titles that you guys can check out this week. Just another really quick announcement before we start to head out. So we all do have the movie or the indie movie of this month, and I'm really excited because you've never seen it. I've never read it. So we're going to have some homework to do, which would be really cool. But it is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Turtles in a Half Shell.
On the Half Shell.
Yeah,
Heroes in a Half Shell.
Heroes in a Half Shell. So we're going to go back to the original 1990 version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We know there's been a ton of animation. There's been some current recreations. Some are hit or misses, depending on where you are. There's been a ton of literature as well. So we're going to actually start with Eastman and Laird's, you know, first creation, which you believe that the movie itself is a really close rendition to the original text.
With a couple things that are not in that first issue, from what I know of the movie, the story plays out very much like it does in the very first Mirage Comics Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I know there's like other characters like Casey Jones, April O'Neil, who are in the movie, aren't in that first issue. I think plot-wise, from what I know of that movie, I'll find out when I watch it.
We're gonna check it out. And yes, Tony Hill, I agree. The guy Pete is awesome.
Pete Agnello is awesome.
Yeah, Pete Agnello is awesome. So our indie comic review along with our indie movie review, this will be for the 18th. So normally we do it on the last Thursday of each month, but because that last Thursday is really close to Memorial Day weekend, We figure that most people will be, you know, settling with family, getting ready to travel and stuff. So we'll do it the week before. So Thursday, May 18th at 1:30 p.m. If you haven't brushed up on it, make sure you watch yourself some Teenage Mutant Turtles and read that first issue, which would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. We're really looking forward to having that. Also, when you get a chance, go over to our site. We have some great books that are on there. Most of our library is up now online. We're keeping it that way right now. We're getting ready for sort of like a fall to winter launch of hard copies and stuff, because we're working on a ton of stuff right now. And our rollout, I want to make sure that when we roll stuff out, we have stuff that's going to come for the next 6 to 12 months, where we don't have any interruption on print runs. But you can get a head start on reading a lot of the stories that we have online, because we hooked up with, what are they called? Comic something. It's on there. But yeah, you can definitely
not Comixology. That'd be really weird if Comixology is making deals with indie publishers right now.
Well, they're going out of business, aren't they?
Exactly.
So that would be weird. So go check it out. We have some great stories on there right now. We're getting towards the end. So if you like what you're hearing, make sure you subscribe to the podcast by clicking blah, 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 wherever you are. If you want to join us, if you're a creator and you want to promote yourself and or projects that you have coming up, just go to amazingactioncomics.com/podcast, fill out the form. John and I would love to have you on the podcast and, you know, help promote what you got going on. Stay up to date on everything that we've got going on in Amazing Action Comics at amazingactioncomics.com. And please, 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 last but not least, support your local comic shops, because we need them to stay around as long as possible. And that brings us to this weekend, because this weekend is a huge weekend. It is Free Comic Book Day across the nation, which is, you know, a yearly thing that happens where they're free to the public, but not free to get. And what I mean by that is that there's certain comics that are made for Free Comic Book Day that comic shops purchase at a much reduced rate. So it allows them to buy a little bit more so they can give out to the public for free. And it's a really good way to get, I guess, the next generation, along with the generation that's reading, but get the next generation, maybe the generation after that, into reading comics, because they'll have everything from kid-friendly stuff to a little bit of the adult material as well. So we have a couple of books, I think, that a lot of people are going to like. We got the mainstream stuff. We got DC Night Terrors. There are a couple of Marvel books that we got there as well. Star Trek. I'm trying to think of any stuff that might be on there.
Yeah, I haven't I haven't looked too much at the books that are coming in, but I'll definitely get an eyeful of them on Saturday. So,
yeah, but you know, each comic store runs it slightly different, but there will be options for you to go there. And you don't need to purchase anything at all. You can just go in that day for the most part. I'm going to say everyone runs it differently, but I know that if you come to the Joker's Child, you don't have to purchase anything. You can actually pick up free comics. And what the Joker's Child actually did this year is they actually hooked up with the Paramus Library, and they have free comic books as well that they're going to be giving out. So it's just a really good way to just get people to read. For me, it's more about getting that next generation to read, because we need those generations of readers to start coming into the stores and getting hooked. Like, we got hooked back in, you know, 80s and 90s, and, you know, we're still doing it. Even if we fall off a little bit for a couple of years, you know, you can always get back on a horse and start riding it again. But if you're never introduced to it at all, and especially in this day and age, and I keep saying in this day and age, which makes us sound so much older, but every generation goes through it, right? You have the generation that's creeping up behind you and everything that preceded before you. And as you grow up, things change. And for us, Gen X people, we were pre-internet. We were pre-cell phone, unless you got that big blocky cell phone that had the big-ass battery attached to it. You're pretty much just, you know, walking around and using pay phones, which were disgusting, because everybody just slibber all over it, which is, I don't know how we did half the shit that we did growing up in the 80s and 90s, because it was disgusting if we look back at it now.
Not to mention the fact that if you lived in Metropolis, every payphone back then, you know, had some guy who was getting naked and then putting tights on in that payphone. But yeah, no, you're
and
right.
If not, just touching people that shouldn't be touching.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, look, when we were kids, free comics were stolen. They were stolen comics when we were kids. Yeah, so it's
No, think about all the things that we have now that we didn't have. So outside of cell phones, outside of the internet, you know, we got introduced to cable, However, there was no on-demand. Right. If you missed your fucking show at 4 o'clock, or if you didn't get up early on a Saturday morning, guess what? You didn't watch your freaking cartoons. You missed it. And everybody was talking about it, and you were crying in the corner because you missed that shit. Mm-hmm. Unless you had a VCR because you were rich and you recorded it.
Yeah, but remember setting the timer on the VCR, and you'd always like a daylight savings, so you miss that hour, right? It records the next hour, or if it's
canceled.
Oh yeah, it's like
or if a show ran over, then it didn't know that, and then you would get like 20 minutes of a show, and the last 5 minutes that are the most important would just fucking cut off, and you'd be like, no. So yeah, we dealt with shit that you guys don't deal with now. So in this day and age where, you know, we got lost in imagination because we had this and not the whole world on a little screen, I think it makes it a little bit more challenging to introduce this medium to a generation that is just used to looking at the screen. And I don't think it has to be an either or. I think they can complement one another. And I think if we had an opportunity to introduce this medium to the next generation, I think they would have not, they would fall in love with it as much as we do. But it's going to take our generation to need to do that, push that.
And when you think now that this is the 21st year, well, we're going to say 20th because there was a miss year, right? 2020 was a skip year, but this is the, so this is the 20th year of Free Comic Book Day. So that's two generations now that have known Free Comic Book Day, essentially. And the fact that it's been going for this long, for two decades, is a testament to the event in and of itself, that the event in and of itself is working to some degree, and keeping people interested in comics and coming for that event. And in a lot of cases, you know, yeah, we've seen people come in for our Free Comic Book Days that have now become regular customers too, who just have been introduced to this world of comics, and that it's, you know, a lot of different genres, a lot of different stories that can be told through this medium, is fantastic. So I think that's great that this is where we're at now, 20 years later with Free Comic Book Day. I think that's fantastic. So.
Yeah. So definitely call or visit your local comic shop this weekend, find out what their hours are for this, and just go and show some love and support. If you're really crazy, you dress up in cosplay. We love that. So over at the Joker Shell, they're going to have Batman. No, they're not going to have a Batman. They're going to have the Batman. Emmy Award. Look him up on. Yes. Look him up on YouTube. You'll find him. Right. Emmy Award winning Batman, and he will come up.
Adam West don't got no Emmy.
Adam West doesn't have a lot right now, does he?
No, but he did. He does have Shark Repellent.
He has a high school named after him in, what is it, Quahog?
Quahog, Rhode Island? Yes, he does. Yes, I think he was mayor of that town, too, shortly before he passed. And sometime after he passed, too. Yes.
Well, guys, if you don't get that reference, I hate you so much. But that's our show for this week, guys. So thank you for hopping on board. Make sure Angel, you go visit your stores. Yep.
I just want to make a quick plug for my sidekick, yes, my side chick podcast. So some of you might know I have my own monthly podcast, The Pep Talk. Really excited about this guest. This is this Sunday because it's the first Sunday of every month. Really excited about the guest. The guest is Marty Appel. Marty Appel was the PR director for the Yankees in the early Steinbrenner years through the dynasty in the late 70s. He has a brand new book out called Pinstripes by the Tail. Half a century in and around Yankees baseball. So if you're a Yankee fan or a baseball fan in general, you know, I'll probably try and post a link in the comments, you know, when we're done on the YouTube channel for this, or check out my Facebook page, John Carly Stripsky Pepe, for links and stuff for this. Marty is an old family friend. He was a good friend of my dad's, and Marty was gracious enough. His book came out Tuesday the 2nd, 2 days ago. And he really is like, oh, I want to promote my book on your podcast. So I thought that was really nice. I don't think he realizes that maybe one or two people listen, but hey, that's a sale, right? So we're going to try and move some paper for Marty, but we're also going to talk about that era of Yankees. We're going to do a little baseball talk, a little music talk. So it'll be a lot of fun. So I just wanted to put that plug in. And of course, today, Marty is actually presenting the scholarship, the Phil Pepe Sports Journalism Scholarship, on behalf of our family at Montclair State University. So, so the pep talk this Sunday night at 10, but it will be archived, this Sunday night at 9. if I'm still alive after Free Comic Book Day on Saturday, and then it'll be archived after that. So I'll get a link in there. But yeah, I just want to give that quick plug to my side chick.
Great. So look out in the comments, guys, for that link and show some support and love to John Pepe. That'd be interesting. I want to listen to that one too, as well.
Cool.
And finally, I want to thank Cherry Hill Comics for coming up and bombing us. I guess we'll see you on Saturday, bro. So be good. Yes. All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Until next time, please be amazing. Stay amazing and read something amazing.